Don't let the spirit of reckless abandon with which Charlie Kirk lived die, said Darren Kinder, author of a just-released memoir called Bury Me in a Dirty Suit. Mr. Kinder goes on to say, may his life, death, and enduring memory be an example of the unsafe lives we're called to live. Publicist Greg Wooding writes, quote, Darren Kinder served as a Secret Service agent for 25 years, during which he protected five U.S. presidents and American interests in more than 40 countries. Kinder received the coveted Medal of Valor Award for his heroism during 9/11. Recently, he launched a ministry encouraging men to live with fierce faith, similar to the life slain Christian activist Charlie Kirk demonstrated, end quote, from Mr. Wooding. Darren Kinder now joins us on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Darren, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
I am excited to be here. Thank you, Jerry.
Sure. Well, let's start with Charlie Kirk as a beginning point, and the fact that Charlie Kirk was very bold, and ultimately he died doing what he felt God called him to do. And but obviously there was a danger involved in what he was doing. But so let's start with Charlie.
Sure. I wrote this book, Bury Me in a Dirty Suit, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a bit. The last entire section, section four of the book, is all about what does it look like for the Christian man specifically, to live what I call the unsafe life. And unsafe is in quotes there. Because we're so obsessed with safety, we're post-COVID, we're so obsessed with that mindset. And then we've kind of changed the definition of safety. Safety has become comfortable. And when I read the scriptures, when I read specifically the gospels, I don't see at any point where Jesus was comfortable, right? He never had a place to lay his head during his ministry. He was chased out of towns. He was, they had thoughts of stoning him at time. He was hunted and obviously eventually arrested and killed for doing nothing wrong. And you could say a lot of things about him, but he was never comfortable. He was fulfilling the will of his father. And that's what he declares in the Garden of Gethsemane, is Father, not my will be done, but your will be done. And so that's what I want to encourage men to do is I like to say this. I say it in my book. There is no safer place to be than the center of God's will. Now, that will not always be comfortable. In fact, you can take that to the bank. That is where when you are in that sweet spot of where you're called to be, there's no safer place to be. No matter what happens to you, good, bad, or indifferent, we're called, we're built for a reason, for a purpose. Living out that purpose is the secret to real content and joy-filled life.
And I understand you were there at 9/11. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I was there at 9/11. I was a young Secret Service agent assigned to the New York field office. And our field office of the Secret Service New York field office was in 7 World Trade Center, part of that complex. So throughout that harrowing day, it was making a choice, one choice after another. Jerry, I like to say that courage is a choice, and me and several of my colleagues just chose on repeat to do the next thing, to enter into people's pain and suffering, and that led us to the 30th floor of the North Tower. That led us to fighting fires after both collapses. That led me to almost getting killed in both collapses. It was a day that we all share, but a day for me personally, I'll never forget.
Okay. Before we go into more details on that, and I'd like you to, if you don't mind talking about that, because it sounds like we have a lot to learn from you about this, but I'm just flabbergasted that the city of New York that experienced 9/11, of course, part of it was in D.C. as well as also in Pennsylvania, but New York City in particular is actually poised to vote a declared Islamist. I didn't say Muslim; I said Islamist to the mayor's office. It's like, what did you know? Are our memories that short? I mean, 9/11 was only what 25 years ago or so, 24 years ago.
Yeah, it boggles the mind, right? It's a real head scratcher, and not in a funny sense. 24 years ago, you're correct. We were attacked, sucker punched, as I write in my book, by 19 radical Islamic terrorists who took those planes and used them as missiles and struck with brutal precision. And of course, they were doing the bidding of Osama bin Laden, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Al-Qaeda. And yeah, we fast forward 24 years. By the way, Jerry, you and I both know the war is still going on. That conflict is still going on. As long as Western civilization stands, then that conflict will go on. And yeah, it boggles my mind how short the memory is indeed.
It's a 1,400-year conflict, frankly, because, you know, those men, those 19 hijackers, their goal was to basically go to paradise. That was their personal goal. They wanted to go to paradise. The shortcut version is you die as a martyr in the, you know, on behalf of jihad, then you go into paradise and get those virgins and so forth. And so that's what that was all about. And it's like, wow, it's much better if people accept Jesus Christ, the, you know, personal faith in Jesus Christ. Then you'll know for sure you're going to go to heaven because he paid the way through his blood. But these, you know, the Islamists didn't believe that. And this is what they were pursuing. And then you personally had to experience, as well as all those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other people, what happened on 9/11. So tell us where you were when you first got the news, oh, a plane has hit this building or something like that.
Right. I was in the gym locker room of the New York field office with the Secret Service. I had just finished working out and I was putting on a clean suit. I felt a shake, felt a rumble. We were told to evacuate and we did. And we went down the stairs in Seven World Trade and we went out onto the street, which was Vesey Street. And I, at that point, I'm 20 yards north of the North Tower, Tower One. On the north side of that. And that's where that first plane came in from the north. And yeah, raging flames and pouring out. And I didn't know, Jerry, what was going on or what that was exactly. I didn't have all the facts, but I knew one thing. I knew I was not looking at an accident. I knew that that through my training or instincts, I don't know, but I knew that we were at war. I knew that I'm a student of history, and I knew that radical Islamic terrorists tried to take down the towers in 1993
right.
via a truck bomb. And I know that in court records, they promised that their brothers would try it again. And I didn't know how the day would unfold, but I knew it was time to answer the bell.
Wow. Okay. So then what happened? Did you start to actually see people jumping from windows and stuff at the ground?
Yeah, I was spared of that. Several guys I was with actually saw some jumpers right in my vicinity. I just didn't happen to see them, which I was spared of. But we relocated on the other side of the complex, and we were rendering first aid to a lot of victims. I was tending the arm, a really badly burned arm of a victim. I'm assuming she got hit with like raining jet fuel that was on fire, and I was tending her arm when that second plane came right over my head and just struck much lower than the first, hit that South Tower. Jerry, I was about 80 yards from there. I could feel the heat on the back of my neck. And at that point, we scurried like ants in the chaos, and a really terrible day became even worse.
Yeah. By the way, when you're saying all these things, I can't help but think of some of these young people talk about skulls full of mush, as Rush Limbaugh used to put it, but that are 9/11 deniers. How can you deny this? I mean, they're living people with testimonies like what you're saying. You were there. How can you say that, you know, this was some sort of inside job or something like that? These planes came in and hit these buildings.
Yeah, you have to be completely detached from reality. And unfortunately, that's the reality that we live in. But it's painfully obvious the truth in this.
Okay, so as the day unfolded, you say the second plane hit, and then by that time, then people would realize, no, this is no accident. This is, and that was what, about 15 minutes apart from the one plane
hit.
Then,
yes. Yeah. I think it was 16 minutes exactly. If I have that correct.
All right. So tell us more details about what happened that day. And you got some sort of Medal of Honor for what you did on 9/11. So go ahead and wax eloquent. I'm just going to shut up and listen.
Myself and a handful of others, we were given the Secret Service Medal of Valor. For our actions that day. And at that point, after that second impact, me and two other colleagues went into the North Tower. We decided to go in and try to help people escape. And we entered into a stairwell and we found, I found a woman on the 10th floor who couldn't evacuate herself. She was exhausted and I helped carry her down. And then I went back up to the 30th floor or so. And on my way back down, From there, I encountered another person who needed to be carried down and was able to get them out. But during all that process, I was separated from the two agents that I was with initially. And I told them I would see them at the next point of need, and we were just never able to reconnect. And I went back outside of the complex, and I was looking for other colleagues. I was on the east side of the complex at this point when I heard metal screeching on metal, a really strange sound. I didn't know what it was. I now know that that's the sound metal makes when it's about to lose its battle with heat and gravity. And I looked up, and just as I looked up, Jerry, the top of Tower 2 buckled. And my first thought was, I'm dead. Lights out, game over. I was, you know, less than 100 yards from the base of that tower. 110 floors started to come down on me, and I started running.
What floor again were you on about?
Well, I was on the street. At that point, I was on the street level.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm 100 yards or less from the base of it, looking for my guys, looking for my people when it started to come down. And that began my mad dash for life. Within seconds, that debris cloud took me over. Large chunks of debris were falling all around me. And I don't know how. I was zigging and zagging, and somehow, I know how. The heart of a man plans his ways, but the Lord establishes his steps. I was guided by the Spirit, and I was able to escape that kill zone. And I have an interesting part of the story, Jerry, where at that point I encountered sunlight, and there was sunlight coming from my left, and I couldn't make out where it was coming from. And as I got closer, I realized I was looking up the mouth of a narrow alley. At the other end of the alley was sun, and I was like, sweet, let's get out of here. I'm going to leave. And but Jerry, what stopped me in my tracks was the screams, the cries of people in the darkness. And they were saying things like, I'm injured. I'm hurt. Somebody help me. Where am I? I can't move. Someone help me. And so I just started. I stood there and I stood in the mouth of that alley, screamed at the top of my lungs, follow the sound of my voice. Come this way. There is light this way. Come this way. Come to me. Follow me. Come to me. There is light this way. And about 10 to 15 people eventually made their way to me, and I would shoot them up the alley towards the light. And when I speak in front of groups, this is part of what I do now. I speak in front of large groups. I can't help but stop and make that use that illustration, as that is our call. That is as Christians, as witnesses and ambassadors for Christ in this world, we are all called to point people out of the darkness and towards the light. The light, those who walk in darkness will not have will have life, and they will have it abundantly, is what the scripture says. And that's part of my life mission now, is pointing people out of the darkness and into the light.
If you were to estimate the population or the number of people that would have been in those two towers, you know, on any given Tuesday, you know, in any given September, it would be a lot more than the total number that died. It's my understanding that about 2,800 died in New York City on 9/11. Roughly 200 killed in Washington, D.C., and there were roughly 3,000 total. Okay, so here's the bottom line. Is it a miracle how few died, you know, in effect? And we have about a minute to go.
Right. It's crazy to think, but 3,000 is a lot. But yes, I lived there. I worked there. I'd been there for a year. I saw just how many people. I saw the parking garages, how many cars and the subway trains and thousands. The fact that the towers stood for over an hour is a testament to, you know, to that structure, to those structures, that so many people were able to get out. I mean, if you were below the impact zone, there was a good chance you were getting out. And it could have been, I mean, I hate to say it, Jerry, it could have been 10,000 easily.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we're basically out of time, but we have enough time to give the name of your book again, Bury Me in a Dirty Suit. And what is your website for the book?
Sure. You can find it at barnesandnoble.com or Amazon, of course. You can find it there. But the website would be fierce-faith.com. That's fierce with a -faith.com.
All right, Darren Kinder. Thanks so much. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.